Support for this podcast comes from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, presenting A Frame of Mind, a new podcast taking a look at race in America through the lens of the museum's past, present, and future. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at nelson-atkins.org.
And welcome back. This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. Glenn North has become something of the poet laureate of Kansas City. His poems grace the galleries of the Nelson Atkins in the 18th and Vine District, and he performs as a spoken word artist all over town. These days, he's launched a new podcast in conjunction with the Nelson Atkins. It's called A Frame of Mind, and it comes with a provocative premise, which is to take a hard look at race in America through the lens of one art museum. His work is also featured at a new exhibit at the Leedy Volkes Art Gallery that features the work of Ada Koch. Its title is Remix, Love Over War. Glenn North is the Director of Inclusive Learning and Creative Impact at the Kansas City Museum. He's worked at the Bruce R. Watkins Cultural Center, the American Jazz Museum, and the Black Archives of Mid-America, and he joins us now. Glenn, nice to have you. Good morning.
Well, thanks for having me, Steve. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. And so you have this new podcast you're doing with the Nelson Atkins. You're looking at race in America through the prism of this one museum. What are you trying to accomplish here?
Well, I think we're hoping to start a conversation. The inside joke with all of us that were working on the podcast is that this podcast is going to fix racism.
Once and for all, right?
Yeah. Exactly. We found the magic bullet. But no, hopefully just start a conversation. There's just been a lot of talk in the museum industry and in cultural institutions, in a post George Floyd America about the role of museums and cultural institutions and communities and how they can provide a safe space or a brave space to have these difficult conversations. And so that's what we're hoping to do with the podcast.
Well, it's interesting that Nelson Atkins wants to do this because it has a long and somewhat checkered history in this city when it comes to race, although Julian Zugasagoiti has done so much to change that in recent years. But it's been seen for so many years as, you know, a white person's museum.
Yeah, and so that's part of what we wanted to confront in the podcast. The Nelson is aware of that history. And Julian, along with the new staff, there are so many people who are working at the Nelson now who are really serious about equity, representation, and inclusion. And the feeling was the only way we can move forward is to take a look back and to own that history and to also give the community an opportunity to weigh in.
Do you still regard it as a white person's museum?
For the most part, I would have to say it still is, you know, Eurocentric in its kind of approach, but it is changing, and it is doing so with things like the podcast, with various programs that are taking place there, with some of the exhibits that they've brought in. And so, you know, in the museum world, change doesn't happen overnight. Sometimes it takes a while to shift, the content and the ideas, and, you know, you're working with folks who sometimes don't see things that way and have a say. And so it's not an easy thing to confront when you're looking at, all these years that it's been a certain way. Over the past 10 years, and, you know, with Julian being there, there have been some significant changes, but there's still some work that needs to be done.
Well, you mentioned what's happening across the country with so many museums having this moment of reckoning, if you will, about what they present to the public, what their missions are. I've seen article after article after article about what's happening with museums across the country. How significant is this moment in your mind, Glenn?
It's incredibly significant. You know, as you mentioned, I've worked at several institutions. I'm currently at the Kansas City Museum, and I'm working with Anna Marie Tutera, who is the executive director, and the staff. And the work that the Kansas City Museum staff has done in terms of content and inclusivity and making sure that all voices are represented, I think is really groundbreaking. You know, our tagline is that we're the home of the whole story. So we want to make sure that people feel welcome and that they feel that their stories are being reflected on the walls and with the artifacts and with the programming we do at the museum. But having said that, the Nelson had been doing that work too. You know, I've been working with them very closely over the past 10 years, and I've seen the change. And quite frankly, I would not have agreed to host the podcast had I thought it was going to be, you know, reactionary or performative. I felt that there was a real sincere effort and an authenticity from everyone who was involved to make sure that we got this thing right.
I was going to say, there's some irony here, because as you point out in your first A Frame of Mind podcast, one of your first experiences with the Nelson Atkins wasn't the best.
No, it was not.
Tell us about that.
Yeah. So I was invited to do an ekphrastic poetry workshop, which is, you know, poetry that's written in response to visual art or a visual image by a woman who worked in the education department there.
This is like 2008, right?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And yeah. So, 2008, I had been doing that work all over the country for several years and had been developing a reputation. And normally when I would be asked to do a workshop, it was pretty straightforward and not a lot of inquiry or interrogation. But shortly after I agreed to do that workshop, I had to present the content in front of a panel of folks who, you know, there was just kind of a hostile vibe in the air. And it seemed kind of, I didn't feel welcome, that's for sure. And although nothing was said, it just, you have a sixth sense when you're a Black person.
Right.
Or if you're in a disenfranchised community, you kind of know when there's something in the air. And I certainly felt it that day and even after. And so the workshop went well. And although I felt somewhat uncomfortable, I felt it was important for me to continue to accept those offers because, you know, it's important that we, you know, a friend of mine who's a poet says we have to occupy whiteness, right? We have to move into these historically white spaces that should be welcoming. And sometimes, you know, it's not a great experience, but hopefully it's creating a pathway for those who come after us.
Well, I was going to say, you know, with these new podcasts, you're attempting to do something difficult, which is to take on this issue of race head on. How difficult a challenge is this? How do you see it?
Yeah, I mean, it to me, it's one of the most important challenges this country is facing right now. And, you know, it's a 400-year-old problem, and we've not figured it out yet. What makes me hopeful, though, I was talking to your producer, Reggie, yesterday, and he was asking me if I was optimistic. And what makes me cautiously optimistic is it seems to me that forever, Black folks have been asked to fix this problem of racism when it's impacting us, but it's not our problem. You know, it's a white person's problem. And what I see happening, particularly, you know, after the death of George Floyd, that just kind of seems to be it has been a very pivotal moment in our history, but more white people are engaged in the conversation. More white people are open to dialogue. And I think that's what really has to happen for things to change. And it's not easy. It's painful. It's uncomfortable. You know, oftentimes I think white people are scared to take a step because they're fearful of saying the wrong thing or doing something that, you know, might offend. And, you know, that's the gig, though. That's the work. That's what's required. And it is uncomfortable and clumsy and awkward, but it's necessary.
Well, this podcast, again, is titled A Frame of Mind. You can find it on the Nelson Atkins homepage. So what do you talk about? What are the topics going to be as you move forward?
Well, we're talking about representation. That is one of the key factors that just about everyone in the community, we talked to over 30 people that had in one way or another a relationship with the Nelson. And, you know, representation just was the idea that, that kept coming up.
When you say representation, you mean the numbers of people of color being represented in art at the museum or completed by artists at the museum?
Both. Like, you know, the idea of walking into a museum and feeling like, you know, you're reflected on those walls. Or, you know, from the artist's perspective, that artists from various ethnicities and backgrounds and gender, you know, are all being represented in that space. And so that was just huge with most of the people that we talked to. A lot of conversations about how art can impact the conversation. You know, oftentimes artists are on the vanguard of social justice and change, and art kind of gives us these opportunities to have discussions that we might not have otherwise. And I think that art impacts people on an emotional level. You know, facts and research and data and speeches and all those things are necessary when we're trying to deconstruct this and understand racism. But it seems that there's something about the power of art and its ability to touch our hearts that is really important, and we can't underestimate that.
How many episodes do you plan on doing?
So this is a 5-episode podcast, and there's a narrative arc that kind of emerged. You know, so we start off with the Black Lives Matter podcast, and I don't want to give away the ending, but yeah, it kind of crescendos in this really powerful moment that took place at the Nelson a couple years ago.
Let me go to a phone call here. Let me go to Elizabeth from Overland Park. Elizabeth, you're on Up to Date.
Yes, I'm very grateful to the Nelson for recent exhibits that feature African-American art, and they're very powerful. And as a Jewish person, I would like to see some attention made to my minority group. I did a search on the Nelson website for Jew, and all I came up with was an anti-Semitic drawing from 500 years ago showing Jews as idolatrous. Of course, anti-Semitism was just the culture at that time. That's okay for them to have that. But, for instance, they have pictures by Chagall showing his childhood in Russia with Jewish scenes, and he's not identified as Jewish. Hmm. You could walk through that whole museum, and I defy you to see the word Jew. Now, where I come from, Minneapolis, their Art Institute has a whole room devoted to Jewish art, and there's beautiful Jewish artifacts that they could show.
Right.
I'd like to see some recognition that we exist.
Glenn, do you deal with what Elizabeth is talking about here?
Well, yeah, that's interesting, and I can certainly relate to her desire, as I said, to feel representation in that space. What's interesting is that in the first episode, you know, each episode is anchored by a specific piece of art at the Nelson. And so in the first episode, there's a poem that I wrote called Lynch Family Blues that is inspired by a painting by Joseph Hirsch, who is a Jewish painter and who did this painting in protest of lynching back in the 1940s. So it was this Jewish painter who really kind of helped light a fire in me in terms of really doing a lot of work in the area of ekphrastic poetry. Like, that painting has had such a huge impact on my life. And the fact that this Jewish man who was experiencing racism in the 1940s, as Elizabeth talked about, would have the empathy to do this painting that spoke to the suffering of, you know, another group.
And Glenn, I love that poem that you just referred to here, just for the record. But let's go back and listen to a snippet from the first episode of the podcast. Again, this is a conversation between Glenn North and Congressman Cleaver.
The Nelson Atkins Museum of Art is one of the most beautiful buildings in Kansas City. Driving along Cleaver Boulevard, you get a really good view. There's a sweeping green lawn that leads up a hill to a massive building with Greek columns and carvings in the stone. It looks like the Supreme Court building or the Parthenon or something.
I think for many African Americans over the years, it's been a beautiful place to simply look at.
That street that I mentioned, Emmanuel Cleaver Boulevard, is named after this gentleman, Congressman Emmanuel Cleaver II. I talked to him over Zoom because of COVID.
My wife, who was born and raised in Kansas City, did what a lot of African Americans did, which was on Sundays after church, after they ate dinner, you're going to have dessert. So this is a big day. It was the only day of the week you had dessert. They would drive by the Nelson Atkins. Many of the whites who are listening to this may not know about that part of who we are and our history, which was the Sunday drive. And it didn't happen just in Kansas City, it was all over the country. African Americans went into parts of the community where they frankly were not welcomed, and they would drive up and down the street looking at the stately homes of the wealthy. They'd turn around and go through the plaza, and on route back to the east side, there's the Nelson Atkins Museum.
And it turns out, Glenn, that your family did the same thing.
Yeah, so that was in the good old days. My parents were still together, and my father had just purchased a new car. And one of our favorite things to do would be to drive out around Mission Hills. And I remember having fun thinking about, you know, which house I would live in and, you know, all of the different landscaping. And it was really fun to imagine. But, you know, as I talked about in that episode of the podcast, and I don't say this to sound like, you know, depressing or anything like that, but I just never envisioned myself living in any of those houses. That didn't seem like a reality for me.
Where did poetry come from in your life?
It came from my grandmother, who challenged me to memorize the poem If by Rudyard Kipling when I was 8 years old. And once I'd done that, although I didn't fully understand the poem, I really loved the rhythm and cadence and began writing my own poetry. And then fast forward to 1997, right around the time that the Jazz Museum and the Negro League Baseball Museum were about to come online and all the revitalization efforts that were taking place in the 18th and Vine area, I started hosting an open mic poetry reading there at a little club called the Mardi Gras, little neighborhood bar. And we called it Verbal Attack. And people were so supportive. It was way more successful than we ever could have imagined. And that led to me having a relationship with the American Jazz Museum. I became the poet in residence there. And that really gave me a platform that launched, you know, my career, if you will, as a poet.
What else about poetry resonates with you?
Well, its ability to, as I said about art in general, touch people on an emotional level. Also, it is a great way to connect with young people and to hear what's on their minds and what's in their hearts. And it has been the vehicle that I've been able or the tool that I've been able to use, I'm mixing metaphors here, but, to have some of these conversations about race and other sensitive issues. I'm very interested in art as activism, and poetry has given me a way to confront these really difficult issues that our communities face in a way that I think has been pretty effective.
You're Kansas City born and raised, right?
Yes.
Why did you stick around?
Well, to be honest with you, I didn't. I remember not feeling so great about Kansas City as a young adult. And I moved to D.C. kind of on a whim. And I lived there for 4 years from 93 to 97. And that's where I became interested in spoken word. They had a really popular scene there. There were bars and coffee shops and all these places where you could go hear spoken word. And when I got back to Kansas City, there weren't really any venues like that. And I remember just feeling kind of a culture shock coming back to Kansas City and not having that community to connect with. And one of my friends said, well, why don't you start something? And it hit me in that moment that instead of, you know, whining about what Kansas City doesn't have, why don't I do something to help Kansas City become the city that I would like to live in? And that really just changed my whole view. And I love Kansas City so much. I would be frustrated, you know, as a young person about things that I wanted to see happen in Kansas City in terms of art and culture. And, you know, Kansas City's, you know, a segregated city like many are in this country. And so I had issues with that. But at this stage, I've just really become so fixed in this community and wanting to be part of the solution that I can't imagine, you know, really living anywhere else.
You know, when it comes to race, when it comes to segregation, what kind of progress are you seeing the last few years?
Well, you know, in terms of what's happening in cultural institutions, which is where I spend a lot of my time, I feel like there has been some forward movement. You know, the fact that we've had three African-American mayors, I think says something about the way our city is evolving. When you look at the political landscape, I do feel that there is representation. You know, Congressman Cleaver and all the great work that he's done over the years. And then I think that, as I had mentioned, there are organizations, like Races United and Surge, Stand Up for Racial Justice, KC. You've got a lot of conversations even taking place in a lot of churches that I've had opportunities to visit. Steve, I'll tell you what really blew my mind is last year I got invited to do a poetry reading for Black History Month at the Kansas City branch of the FBI. And so that was a very experience, but I felt spoke to the fact that there are a lot of people who are really wanting to see things change.
Hey, I don't want to walk away from this conversation without having heard one of your poems. The one we're going to listen to really amounts to an ode to your childhood in this town. You read it in the second podcast of A Frame of Mind. Let's listen.
I wrote a poem a while ago about what my city beautiful looks like, and here's an excerpt from it. The poem is called 1745 East 21st Street. The residents of my fondest memories. Red Kool-Aid, Captain Crunch memories. Watermelon now or later flavored memories. That call to mind a simpler time when blinking street lamps called us in for the night. While Stevie sang songs in the key of life. And we rode the Ohio Players roller coaster of love before it flew off the track. I'm talking way back. Pre-Bloods, pre-Crips, pre-crack, pre-autoimmune deficiency syndrome. Yes, those days are long gone. Daddy, Mama, my sister, and me rode proudly in his car, slicing the breeze, headed for French vanilla cones from Velvet Freeze. Then it was on to the Fairyland Drive-In for a Friday night. I often wondered who'd win if Superfly and Shaft ever got in a fight. This is my sappy, nostalgic, do you remember when poem? My back in the day, by the way, whatever happened to the good old days poem? And I wrote it for me, because every now and then, even if it's only by thought, you just need to go back home.
Nothing wrong with a little sentiment at times, Glenn. I want to thank you for your time today. Again, A Frame of Mind podcast can be found on the homepage of the Nelson Atkins website, nelsonatkins.org. Glenn, thanks so much for your time today. Much appreciated.
Well, thank you, Steve. I really enjoyed talking to you.
You bet. That's it for today. This has been Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. We'll see you tomorrow.